Today we get a chance to start on a brand new wonderful parak. So until now we've been talking about the dinim of nedarim themselves, and then we moved on to discuss the dinim of hatarat nedarim, of she'ela. And we spoke about what type of things are considered to be a petach at great length, the question of nolad, the difference between a petach and a neder ta'ut. We're moving on now to the next major sugya in the sugya of nedarim, which is hafara. We haven't discussed hafara, we've discussed only hatara. And the difference between hatara and hafara, hatara of course is a chokhon, who is matir the neder of anyone. Hafara is a unique situation in which a husband is given the ability to cancel within the day of Shmiah. And the Gemara will go into the details, what defines the day, what defines the Shmiah, and so on. He can cancel a neder. A father whose daughter is still not yet some reshuso, so she's still a na'ara, he is able to do the same for his daughter. And in an interim state, which is the state with which our parak opens, because obviously you get the most information by examining the strange liminal conditions, which is between the reshut of a father and the reshut of a baal, there's the interim stage, which is called an arusa. What's the relationship of the two people that are involved in this na'ara? Again, remember, we're talking about a na'ara. By the way, when I say na'ara, it includes a ktana in the case where a ktana could make a neder, and there is such a case. But remember, especially by nedarim, we find an interim stage between katznut and na'arut, which normally doesn't exist, which is called muflas samuch le'ish. We're over there in the year prior to the actual year of gadlut, nedarim are chal, as opposed to other chiyuvim in the Torah. And in that state as well, it would be included in the halacha of hafara. So here we have a liminal stage between the reshut of the father and the reshut of the baal, the unique reshut of the father, the unique reshut of the baal, which is the na'ara hama'urasa. In that case, the Mishnah is going to tell us that avi u'baala do this hafara, and hafara simply cuts the neder short. Doesn't have to look at any logic, it doesn't go back and say, would you have made if, and so on. It simply stops the neder where it is. And in that sense, it's different than the she'ela, because the she'ela makes the original neder into a mistake, and uproots it, makes it as if it never happened. So, fankan the helik aperek, daf samach zayin, na'ara hama'urasa, avia uba'ala mefir nidareha. So, in this stage of na'ara hama'urasa, where up until this time she's been in the reshut of the father, and from this point on she's in the reshut of the baal after the chuppah, in between we require both the father and the husband in order to achieve a hafara. Now don't think that that means either a father or a husband, aviyu ba'ala, and to make that clear, as we'll see in the Gemara, the Mishnah continues on to say, but if hefer ha'av v'lo hefer ha'baal, or hefer ha'baal v'lo hefer ha'av, in either event, eino mufar. So that when it said before aviyu ba'ala, it means exactly what it's saying. You need both, and one without the other doesn't work. You need either direction. Ve'in tzarech lomar, not even needing to mention the fact, shekiyem echad mihem, if one of them was mekayem the neder and said, I like that neder, then certainly the other one will not be able to be made for it. Now, that's if you don't need to say it, then don't. And of course, the Mishnah must be saying something, so the Gemara is going to examine what that's coming to tell us.
But is she under the reshut of the baal? Surely they need to from home at this point.
She's technically, when you say reshut, it doesn't mean what home she's living in. She may have an apartment in Timbuktu, which is in Barnea's neighborhood. It's not as far off as it could. But she may be living somewhere else. When we say in the reshut, we don't mean literally in the apartment of.
She's going to be in the
we mean
house,
in the legal in the legal rishus. Where she is irrelevant.
Okay.
So legally speaking, she still is partially in the reshut of the av, but she's already partially in the reshut of her husband to be. Remember, erisin is not what erisin means today. It doesn't mean we're engaged to be married. It means there's already a kinyan of kedushin, of havaya.
But they're not in the same house, are they?
No, but that, who cares?
Okay.
I mean, we hope they're not. So now the Gemara actually wants to clarify that second piece where it says Efer Av lo Efer Abal, Efer Abav lo Efer Av, it seems to be completely redundant. This is our motorcycle gang that just pulled up now. So Hainu Reisha, says the Gemara, isn't that what you just said? You said Avia Uba'ala Mefirin Nidareha. That means if you need both Avia Uba'ala, then obviously one without the other ain't going to work. So why do you have to tell me Efer Av lo Efer Abal, Efer Abav lo Efer Av? Says the Gemara, because had I only said that Reisha Ma'adatema O Avia O Ba'ala, as we learned in the Mishnah, we can often say Avia U Ba'ala and or. So either or can be made for. Therefore, Kamashmalan, that actually one without the other is nothing. And it wouldn't even have helped to say, to make things shorter and say, Shnehem. It could have been the same thing. Even if it was Achi Aferu Shnehem, I might have thought that's only in one direction. In other words, Avia needs Ba'ala, but perhaps Ba'ala doesn't need Avia. In order to make that absolutely clear, and we're going to see why I would have thought things like that, actually, from the Psukim. So in order to make things absolutely clear that either one will achieve nothing without the other, we have to say, talk it out. Hefer av lo hefer abal, hefer abal v'lo hefer av. But, I mean, this next piece, and I needn't mention that if one of them was Mekayim, I mean, as the Gemara, well, if you needn't mention it, then why do you? So then, Lama Lilamidna, and I say, so why are you saying it? No. The point is, I mean, some have this gerse here that we have. Hashti Yishloma Hefer Zevelo Zevelo Klum Kiyem Echad Me'am Biboy. If I know already that Ahafara, there would be a purpose in saying this, even though it's obvious. The purpose is that otherwise you may think to yourself, doesn't a Mishnah often do that? Doesn't a Mishnah say zu the ein tzarich lomar zu? That's actually a format of a Mishnah, ein tzarich lomar. So if the Tana talks out the ein tzarich lomar, he's not doing anything differently than what's assumed in every Mishnah that's constructed along the lines of ein tzarich lomar. Therefore, the Gemara wants to point out that here it makes no sense to say ein tzarich lomar, as the Ron explains. Ein tzarich lomar is meaningful where there is another case that could have been learned out obviously from the first case. Over here, it's not another case. Being mekayem certainly includes not being mefer. So you can't possibly add anything by saying, oh, and I also was mekayem. I mean, that's less than an ein tzarich lomar. It's insane. You're saying the same thing twice. You're just putting on a prettier picture on top. I mean, why do that? That's the Gemara's question. So what's the point of saying it? Says the Gemara, it's trichale, kegon, actually, so some take out that whole extra piece, just put in the words, ki it's trichale lamitne. Where do we need it? In a case, kegon, deferachad, let's say one of them did the hafarah, and the other one not only abstains from hafarah, but he's actually mekayim. He says, I like that net. Now, by saying he likes that neder, he is basically joining the kayach of the neder of the daughter, or of the wife. But what he does in this case is he goes in and he is shoel to a chacham on the hakama. Because hakama is like a neder. So in the same way you could be shoel on a neder, you could be shoel on a hakama. He goes and he's shoel on a hakama. Now, when you're shoel on a neder, and therefore when you're shoel on a hakama, you uproot what you did as if it never happened, right? So now, it should be the equivalent of his just finding out. No, I find out. I'm now in a position to be made. So I would have thought that there's no problem. If I'm made for now, there's no problem. The first guy was made for, the husband, or the father, as the case may be, whoever went first. Now, it's true, in the middle, I thought that it was a good idea, but then I went ahead to a chacham and I was oiker my hakama. So now I should be able to just go ahead and be made for. Comes along the mission to tell us that that won't help. Ma'adatema, I would have thought, the ma'ad uke ha'akre, whatever it is that he had placed as a blockage between the hafarah and the neder is now removed through the she'ela. Kamash malan the mefirim shnehem bevat achat. It is insufficient to do a hafarah in that fashion. Now there's a big machlokas rishonim what that means. Many learn, including the Ramban, the Ran, that means only the following. You need to have both of them be able to do a hafara at the same time, meaning not literally at the same time, but that there should be nothing that prevents the hafara from taking effect on the neder. What would prevent it? The fact that there's a hakama. If there's a hakama of someone else, my hafara is not going to be able to do anything. The passive lack of another hafara, simply we're waiting till that hafara comes to go together with this hafara. But if I go ahead now and I make kim, I'm now, until the time that I'm ochre it, the hafara stands there and it's a joke. Well, this hafara ain't going to do anything. Therefore, when I remove now the hakama that was in the middle, I now need to go and be made for together with the, in other words, within the same period without anything in between. But there's certainly nothing that prevents a hafara. It just needs to be done again. So whoever was the first one to be made for and the other one had been made him, he now, the first one has to be made for again, and this time the second one will be made for and not made. That's how the Rambam learns. The Rambam, however, understands that the meaning of the Gemara is that if a hafara is ineffective when it's done, and here where there's a hakama, it's ineffective, it's no longer usable. And therefore, this neder cannot be mufar. So the first one to be made for, the case as it may be, the father was made for first, or the baal was made for first, that one doesn't work because of the fact that there was hakama in between. Comes along now, the second one, it can't work either, even though he already removed it, because it can no longer join up with the first one. And a hafara, once you shot your bolt, it's over. You can't be made for again. Where are you going to be made for from? The hafara, the koach that you had, you gave, and it was insufficient to be made for the matter.
But both of them are within 24 hours. I mean, it has to be within 24
hours. Yeah, it has to be within 24 hours, yes. And that, we'll talk about the where we do. We're not up to that stage yet, of how long you could be made. Okay, so now, the way, therefore, to understand the Mishnah, and this bothers the Ran, because you shouldn't say Ein Tzarich Lomar when you're coming to tell me an immense chiddush. What do you mean Ein Tzarich Lomar? Say it and allow me to understand the chiddush. Don't say Ein Tzarich Lomar. Ein Tzarich Lomar implies that I could actually derive that from the first part of the Mishnah. I certainly cannot. Why would I ever think from the first part of the Mishnah that there's a chiyuv that they have to be able to be made for together, and if one of them shoots his afara before the other guy is able to use his afara to make him, that then it's not going to be good. Says the Ran, the meaning of Ein Tzarich Lomar in this case is as follows. The Tana is saying, now listen to me carefully. I don't need to tell you, in terms of the din of Hafara, that if he's Mekayim, that obviously he wasn't made for. Okay, so I'm telling you something else. That's the point. Okay, now you go figure out what I'm telling you. But that's it. In other words, it's basically saying, okay, look at this. If I say I don't need to tell you that, so what do I need to tell you? Which is essentially what the Gemara is doing. You're telling me I don't need to tell you a din of hafara. So what are you telling me? And now we're looking into what you're telling me. So according to Rambam, you're telling me, unless it's at the same time, it's never going to work. And again, the same time doesn't mean, of course, literally the same time. Nor does it even mean within the same 24 hours. Because, I mean, if one hears one day and one hears the next week, I mean, it doesn't have to be the same time. But there can't be something that prevents the other one from being made for. What would prevent him from being made for? The fact that the neder existed. I, you'll say, as indeed the Rishonim asked, but I thought the whole issue is that if you remove it with She'elah, it's as if it never existed, right? Says the Ran, that's not much of a question. A lot of the Rishonim talk about it, complex explanations. Say the Ran, you don't need a complex explanation. Let's take the case, the classic case where we say that a neder is removed completely. A man is mekadesh a woman on condition that she does not have any nedarim. She goes ahead and she shoelet on whatever nedarim she has. She says, well, I don't have any nedarim. She's absolutely right. She doesn't have any nedarim. And she never had any nedarim because the she'elah removed it. However, says the Ran, that's irrelevant to the case over here. Because the fact that if I do a real kinyan, I do kiddush, the fact that I now work things out retroactively doesn't necessarily mean that it's irrelevant to look at time at the moment that I'm doing the kinyan. If I'm going to say to you, but there are Nadorim. Now, back in time, before this happens, and now I go ahead and say, but if I took a time machine back now, I wouldn't find Nadorim. So, that would be irrelevant. Except for the fact that since I made a real Kenyan, that Kenyan takes place, it's standing there, ready to be found. Over here, there's no Kenyan. There's nothing serious that's done. Ahafarah is an act that has no meaning if it's unable to be together attached to the hafara of the other part. The Baal or the Oris, as the case may be. Therefore, to say that in such a case, if I do things to retroactively change time in the past, that now the hafara is suddenly going to be meaningful, I don't say that. Because hafara is only defined in terms of what it does at that moment. It isn't a real Kenyan. It's just a very weak, waiting to be utilized event. And if it can't be utilized, it doesn't become suddenly utilizable by affecting time retroactively. That's his simple explanation of the difference between a Kedusha, which is a real Kenyan, and a Hafara, which is essentially a virtual event. Nothing's happened yet until I get the Hafara of the other person. Okay, so we have a major machlokas Rishonim in how it is that we're to understand the din of requiring a Hafara b'batacha. Does it mean that you can never be made for again if there was a hakama that stood between one's hafara and the other, the way the Rambam learns? Or does it mean only that you need to go back and do the first one to do the hafara needs to do it again after the hakama in order for the two of them to be at the same period, meaning without something preventing hafara in between, and at that point you can be made for later, like the Rambam. Now, before we begin the next sugya, I'm going to ask you to look inside of the Chumash, because we want to take a look, understand the parsha properly. I forgot to turn it back on. Okay, let's take a look at Matot Perek Lamed Pasuk Dalet. So here we have a case of Ishaki Tidor Neder LaHashem Vasra Yisabat Beit Aviyah Binurea. Here she is in the reshut of her father as a Nara. Once she's already a Bogeret, obviously she's left the reshut of her father. He has no rights at all to her. So if her father hears, he doesn't say anything about it, and he's quiet, then there's nothing to do. All of her Nadorim are chal. But the day that he hears about it, he turns her away from her intent, then kol nedorea v'esra sh'asra nafsha lo yakum v'ashem yislach la keini aviyota. This is a lot of fascinating diyukim in the words here and what this all means, which we're going to look into in this parak. But right now, we're trying to get to the limen, which is where we are. Let's take a look what happens here. V'im hayoti yela ish unedorea aleha. Now, before we try to figure out what that's talking about, I ask you to look ahead a little bit into Pasuk Yud Aleph. Yud Aleph says, V'im beit isha nadara. However, if she was in her husband's home as opposed to her father's home, Pasuk Yud Aleph. It's still not a Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'im beit isha nadara, o asra yisrael nafsha b'shva, v'shama isha v'hecher ishla, lo eini ota, v'komu kol nedorea v'chol yisar asher asral nafsha yakum, v'im yafer yaferotam isha b'yom shema, etc. So this is clearly a case where she has a husband, and the husband can be made for. Fine, so we have two extremes. The opening where she's beit aviyah, the closing where she's beit isha. What's this middle piece? The middle piece begins in Pasuk Zayin. V'im hayo tihye le'ish nedorea aleha. O miftas vate asher asra al nafsha. V'shama isha b'yom shamo v'echar ishla. V'komo nidarea v'esarea asher asra al nafsha yakum. V'im b'yom shamo isha ota yaniota v'efer nidarea alea, and so on. What is this? There's a whole piece that follows, a pasuk Yud Aleph, that says exactly that. But what is this middle piece? So we have to understand that the middle piece and the vav that begins the middle piece is meant to show a continuum. What pasuk?
V'im b'yom? Which
vav? No, v'im hayoti ele'ish. Why? How could it be v'im b'yom? We're talking about the vav that connects the middle stage to the opening stage. V'im hayot yela ish and the dorea aleha. So what is that telling us? The way the Gemara understands, of course, we're going to go into the details of this diuk, but the way that the Gemara ultimately understands it is that if she goes from the house of the father to kiddushin, not to nisuin, so she doesn't have isha that is her husband that is now able to do it on his own. So there, if she will be the darea aleha in a case where she's now married, we need, in addition to the original case, which is the av, we need now the also the isha. Now, there's another very important thing to note. In the pasuk Yud Aleph that discusses what happens where she makes a neder and she's married, it says ve'im beit isha nadara. If she made the neder in her husband's home, how about if she made the neder before she entered her husband's home? Apparently, the husband has no business dealing with that neder. It's only where the neder was in the husband's home. And yet, in the interim stage, in Pasuk Zion, it says, "Vimayot yelish unedorea aleha." If she goes and gets married and already has nedorim, wait a second, make up your mind. If she's totally in her husband's home, he can't do anything about nedorim that pre-existed. So how could this case do something about nedarim that pre-existed? He has more koyach before the chuppah than after the chuppah. I mean, surely we don't want to acknowledge that, do we? So surely legally he's not as much isha before the chuppah as he is after the chuppah. So what in the world could this possibly mean? This is called, by the way, the technical term for this is kodmim. Kodmim means those things which pre-existed. So the Baal is not mefer bekodmim. He can't deal with a neder that existed before he became the husband. The Orus can. Obviously, the only way that the Orus could possibly deal with kodmim is by utilization of the keach that had the power of those kodmim in the first place, which is the father. Now, the truth is, if left to my own devices, I would say, look, all that happened is that she has an heiress, and she's still living with the father's home. And the reshus of the father is not gone yet. The father is still the one that's going to be able to, if it doesn't go through, he's still the one that's going to be able to accept kedushin, and so on and so forth. So maybe the father should continue dealing with this period. Ah! But the Torah says, beferish v'shama isha. So it can't be that the father is going to alone deal with this huge situation. Therefore, we have to understand that there is a mutual dealing with this between the father, who clearly could deal with kodmim, he's always the one who deals with those nadarim, and those with the nadarim that were aleha when she got now into the situation with her husband-to-be. So together, the two of them can be made for, and then kodmim are unimportant, because we have the keach of the avs hafara as well. So you can see that even a naive reading of the parsha forces us to note that there's three different stages that the parsha is describing. And even a somewhat naive reading of the parsha also forces us to note that the vav has to be taken seriously, because otherwise it's an impossible situation to say that a husband is limited to non-kodmim, but an arus isn't, unless there's something additional with the arus. Therefore, the vav that opens up the interim stage is meant also to connect the father to the arus, to enable them together to deal with this net. Okay? Now, obviously, there are alternative issues. In other words, I might understand that it's not that the Orus is actually doing anything, because even a Baal can't be made for Bekodmim, so what's he really going to achieve by putting his input in? Maybe the Torah only mentions the Baal in this case to tell us that he can screw things up, by saying, no, I like that neder, but not that he can actually help and make for the neder. So that maybe the father alone would be able to make for the neder, but if the Orus objects and says, no, don't be made for that neder, that's a good neder, maybe she'll behave like a bench. So then he would be able to prevent the neder from being mufar. That's an alternative explanation, right? And we'll see the Gemara is going to consider other possibilities here of how to understand what is necessarily a balance that we're looking for, because we're dealing with this literal threshold between being in the father's rishus and the threshold which you cross as you bring her across the threshold.
I assume that when the Baal finds out that she's made a netter, he can withdraw his marriage.
No, we talked about that at great length. Whether that's a norm or whether that's only if he specifies, we had a whole sugya about that back in Ksuvus. As a matter of fact, that was the reason that Ksuvus and Adarim were connected, according to many Shittot. Okay. So, now that we've looked at the Chumash carefully, we can take a look at the Gemara. Naraha murasa avia uba'ala mefir nidareha minol. Where do we get that from? Omar Rabba, look, the Pasuk basically says, Omar Kra, now our girsa is as we have it here, V'im hayot yela ish unadareha aleha. Some of the early Kitvei Yad have a better girsa, which actually, I mean, even the Tfus Minkin has this, there's a better girsa that throws in the end of the previous Pasuk, which is actually absolutely essential for us to understand what the drasha is, which is V'im heniya avia ota, etc., etc. And the Hashem yislach la, because ki heniya avia ota. So it starts with the closing words, Kenia via ota, and then ve imayot yela ish nedarea aleha. Because actually that's what we're relying on, as we just saw. We're relying on the vav that's connecting the sugya over here of the erison to the opening sugya of the bebet aviha, and we're saying that the vav tells us that the av, together with the oros, are able to be made for nedarim. So mikan the nara murasa shavia ubaala mefir nedarea. So the Gemara is taking all this for granted. It's taking for granted that you know perfectly well that there's a closing sugya that begins in Pasuk Yud Aleph that discusses a case where she's completely married. She went to the chuppah. It's taken for granted, according to our girsa, that there was an opening sugya that discussed the father's ability to be mefir. It's taking for granted that you see the vav is connecting these two sugyas, and you have a good reason for believing that that vav is meant to be halakhically meaningful, because otherwise you have an impossible contradiction in terms of kodmim, that the husband is only able to be made for where she's beit isha nadara, that the netter actually took place, beit isha, and here it specifically says, unadara aleha, from before. Put all of that information in your head, and you're left with, the Gemara's opening, all of the things that we just took for granted when we read through the Parsha. Now the Gemara is going to go back and try to unravel all of this by offering alternatives and talking out, how do I know that I have a right to make each one of those assumptions? Okay? But when we first open it, we open with the assumptions taken for granted. Says the Gemara, the ema haikra benisu aktiv. Wait, couldn't imayot yela ish be referring to a nisua? No, of course not. Because imishum nisuar krach rin aktiv. Remember posik yud aleph. The im beit isha nadara, and so on. So clearly this can't be the same thing. Why would we need two psukim to talk about the same situation? Says the Gemara, well, maybe both psukim are indeed dealing with nisuin, not with erisin. Ema tarvayo benisua. And then when you turn to me and say b'chitema, you'll say to me, why in the world would I need trei kroi benisua lamavim? What's the point of having two cases that are the same case? Ah! From the second case, where it says ve'im beit isha nadara, I learn out that ena baal mefer bekodmim. So maybe that last piece is there to teach that you should know that when she enters into the husband's reshus, things start again. The nedarim that were there from before, he can't touch, whatever their status is, it is. And now Beit Isha, if she now makes a new neder after the chuppah, then Enoch Inami. But as far as before is concerned, the father's reshus is on her until she goes to the chuppah. She's not yotzeis from the reshus of the av. Says he wants to put, that's ridiculous. I mean, if it would have said the second one, ve'im beit isha nadara, and then v'shama isha ve'niota, I mean, labna mela shamati, but meanwhile, it's still telling you that the husband is able to be mefer, isn't it? Fine, it's telling you he can't be mefer b'kodmin. But it's telling you, bottom line is, it's also telling you that the ein abal made for bekodmim, and the fact that the im beit isha, it's enough that he should be made for alone. You learn both things out of that second case. What would be the point of having the first, meaning the middle case, at all? Im hayot yela ish. So we're forced to say, therefore, the im hayot yela ish is indeed the threshold situation between the state of the Baal and between the state of being in the father's rishos and the state of being in the Baal's rishos. Viva it ima. Oh, you know what? I could also tell you, don't even worry about this. Don't even look at the other possibilities, because basically the Torah is defining the state for you. Im hayot yeh is by definition kiddushin. So ibaitema havaya, the lashon of havaya, v'hayeta le'ishacher. That havaya always means kiddushin, not nisui. And therefore, there's nothing to even discuss in this case. Now, the Ran points out that we do find havaya in used in the sense of nisuin, because it says achoto betula asher lo hayata le'ish. What does lo hayata le'ish mean? A kohen to be metame to his sister who was lo hayata le'ish. Does that mean that she isn't an arusa? No. We learn out over there that it means that she could be an arusa, but she's not a nisua. Which must mean asher lo hayata, must mean nisuin, which means that it could be mashma, nisuin. So how do we know over here that it's true? Maybe, since it means both, there would be a halacha of bein bala, bein ishar, mefer, in both states. Says the Ran, there's no hava mina b'chol. We don't even have to deal with that, because we understand, without mashmaut from sukkim, we understand across the board in all halachot, why in the world could I be made for an adorim? The father has no rishus over her. Why in the world would he be able to be made for an adorim? At that point, he's a stranger. Once she's yotzeit min rishuto, he's a stranger. And as a matter of fact, he's such a stranger that we refer to him as being dead, basically. She's called a yitoma. She could be a yitoma b'chaye avia, but she's a yitoma in a legal sense. She has no father at this point. So I don't need a pasuk to tell me that. Therefore, the only application of the word havaya, which is what the Vibayitema is saying, in this case, would mean heresy. And therefore, I don't need to look at the balance between the two other cases that are given. It's clear that it's saying, the Torah is saying erisin. So if she goes ahead and she becomes an arusah, then her husband can go ahead and be made for the nedarim. Now,
it is only before she's 10
that's wrong. Once she's a bogeres, she is basically, it doesn't have a father. That's true. Says the Gemara, but if you're telling me Havaya is Kiddushin, okay, I understand that. But why not say Ema Av L'chudei Lefer? Why can't we say that basically the father's Rishos is still the Rishos? We know that the Oros, we spoke this out when we looked at the Pasuk naively. We know that a husband has no Rishos to deal with pre-existing Nidorim. And yet, the Torah is saying over here that the Oros is involved. In what sense could he be involved? Could we not say that his involvement consists of being able to mess up the father's ability to be made for? In other words, actually, the Hafara is coming completely from the father. The only reason the Torah is mentioning the husband is because we need his agreement. Because if he says, I don't agree, the father cannot be made for, but he himself clearly has no ability to be made for Bikodmin, so maybe we're not using his positive hafara at all. And that makes a great deal of sense. He can't be more powerful than the Baal. It's unreasonable to say, well, he has a little bit of power with Kodmin. Let's put that little bit of power together with the husband, with the father, and then we can do hafara. And therefore, it makes a great deal of sense that the vav of the ve'im hayotiyeh, that's referring to the fact that an Oros is there to mess things up. But he can only be, in terms of the power of the Vafar, we have to be semich on the father completely. Maybe that's what it means. So, ema av lechudei nefer, says the Gemara, if that would be the case, then what would be the meaning of putting in the pasuk in Cain, vasara isar? Why would we need vasara isar bebeit aviha? That should be the lashon, normally. What's the meaning of vasara isar bebeit aviha? Why would the pasuk have to tell us that where she is, that first state, what was the first state? The first state was, gentlemen, this is so fascinating. It's so beautiful to see how much information is kolol in the pasuk. I just can't understand how you could possibly doze off. It's the most exciting thing. I mean, if you were halfway down a hill and you're skiing, would you close your eyes and doze off? So, Richie! That's a virtual Richie. So, again, what do we need the opening state for? If you're telling me the only way to understand the interim stage is that actually the father is doing the afara, and the orus is mentioned only in order to say he can't object. So then don't tell me, you've already told me that the father has reshut. What do you have to go to all the tirch of creating three separate states? Two states. One where the husband is the soul, that's in Beit Isha Nadara. And then, before that, the father has reshus, unless the Oros objects. Obviously, if there is no Oros, the Oros can't object, and therefore the father has reshus. That's a given. So I don't even need to discuss the opening state if the halakha was that the father on his own can achieve the hafara, and the Oros is only mentioned in order to keep him out of the way. Must be, therefore, that we're talking about a different set of issues over here, in which in one state it's the father that does the hafara, in the opposite state it's the baal who does the hafara, and in the interim stage it's the av and the baal who does the hafara. That's what the Gemara is coming to say. Therefore, what we need to say, I mean, and why would I say I don't need that state? Because I would say to myself, for God's sake, hashpi eshloma, b'makom arus mefer av lechudei. If even where there is a person to whom she's already havayat to, in other words, they already got kedushin, they just didn't go to the chuppah, nonetheless, the father can do afara all on his own. As far as the orus's part in the play, it's just keep your mouth shut and stay out of this and let me do the afara. That's all. So then do I need to know that when he's on his own and there is no orus, shalom b'makom arus, me boy, I need a whole part of the Torah to tell me that the father has a shus when there's no orus. The orus can only make things worse, not better. She's obviously going to be more in the shus of the father when there is no orus, not less. So don't mention it at all. Therefore, we are left with two absolute states. One given to the father completely, one given to the orus completely. And then an interim stage in which the orus is together with the av. QED? No. Not quite. So I think, well, there's still an alternative. The alternative is this. You're telling me that actually the fact that I mentioned this interim stage is an indication that the father has lost the power to be made for the Chudei. Okay. If that's the case, why not reverse the whole story? Why not say that the Av Liboy Orus, but the Orus Luchudei Mefer? Maybe actually what's happened is we've moved out of the Rishus of the Father for Nadarim and given it over to the Orus. And why do we mention the Father? For the same reason that we previously mentioned the Orus. We thought maybe we just mentioned the Orus, he should keep his mouth shut and not make problems. Maybe the opposite is now true. Now that we've seen that the Orus is essential, maybe he's the real Mefer and the Father is just there to let us know that if he doesn't keep his mouth shut and he objects, or he's Mekayim, that then the Orus is not going to be able to be Mefer. So maybe that's how to look at it. Says the Gemara, why don't we say, Ema Av Liboy Orus, but the Orus Lechudei Mefer. And if you're going to tell me, so then why bother mentioning the Av at all, the way that we have it with the Vav and the way we set it up? Av, the Kos of Rachmana Lomali, Liboy Lechudei Mefer. Hakim, If he did a hakamah, then that hakamah is a valid hakamah. And if he doesn't keep his mouth shut, we got a problem. So that would be the reason. In Ken, Ve'im Beit Isha Nadara Lamaikata, says the Gemara, because then what would be the point of talking about the last case? The last case is now the same thing that the first case was when we're looking in the other direction. When we, a moment ago, when we thought the Av was the Iker, we're saying if the Av was the Iker in a case where there is an Arus, why do we need to mention a whole other case, the first case, where there is no Arus? Now we throw that the other direction. If an Arus is sufficient where there is an Av, why do we need to mention the third case, where there is no Av and there's only the Baal? That's obvious, even as an Arus he was able to be made for. All we wanted was for the Av to shut up. But where there is no Av, I don't need to even worry about the Av shutting up. So what's the point of saying in Beit Ishana Dara Alam Lamai Kata Kavachomer Uma B'Mokam Av Arus Nefer Lechudei Shalom B'Mokam Av Mi Boy? Why in the world would I need it? Ve'ema Ve'im Beit Ishana Dara Lomar She'ina Val Mefer B'Kodmin. Wait, but we still have that additional point, don't we? Don't we need to know that the husband cannot be made for a neder that pre-existed? Exactly, says the Gemara. Minei, that proves it. There you go. Because if he can't be made for Bekodmim, how the heck was he made for Bekodmim when he was an Orus? That's the point. Now you see all of the things that we took into consideration subconsciously when we made our first deal. Minei, that proves it. Exactly. Orus made for Bekodmim. What are you telling me? The Orus can be made for Bekodmim. How can he be made for Bekodmim more than if you were the Baal? El Allah, there's only one possible explanation. It must be Mishum Shutvate Da'av. It's because he's utilizing the Av's Keach of Afora that therefore he's now involved even in the Afora of Nedarim, which are Kodmim, because we no longer say to him, hey, buddy, this is none of your business. He says, what do you mean? She's still halfway in that life. What do you mean it's none of my business? I'm not dealing with a wife who's got a whole new life with me. I'm dealing with a woman who's still got a father and a family, and she's halfway there, and she's thinking about what her life is like there, so that I have a whole different set now of interrelationships. Therefore, because of that shutafut with the father, I indeed can be made for, obviously only together with him, but I can be made for those adorim that exist on her at this point, even though I just recently entered into the picture, which gives some profound insights into the nature of that interim period itself. Because otherwise it should boil down to just don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut. If you're telling me that Lamaisi has no kayach in Kodmim, so how could he get kayach in Kodmim just because the father is there? Bottom line is, he can't utilize his power of Afora, and yet the Gemara is saying specifically that he does. It's not passive. It's not that he just don't say anything. You could see that there's a whole subtext here that interrelates the question of not saying something, not doing hafara, with the nature of the actual hafara itself and how hakama functions. Okay, but that becomes clear later on. So we've seen, we've opened up all of the issues by examining this interim stage, and the Tana of Rabbi Yishmael says, boy, have you made a complex thing out of something that's very simple. Why don't you learn how to read? The Torah ends with, it says, Ben Ish Li Ishto Ben Av Lebito. What do you think it throws all that together for? That's to teach me that that's what we're talking about over here. Ela Achukim Asher Tziva Hashem Et Moshe Ben Ish Li Ishto Ben Av Lebito Ben Urea Beit Aviyah. Doesn't that tell you that a woman Ben Urea Beit Aviyah is both a Ben Av Lebito and also a Ben Ish Li Ishto? That's a simple way of looking at it. Of course, tomorrow we're going to have to figure out, well, what is he doing all of those other psukim? Don't tell me he throws out all those great diukim. But I suppose you could say I slept through them. So, anyway, so the Tana of Rabbi Shmuel, Tana Benish Lishto Ben Av Lebito Mikan LeNaram Urasa Shaviu Ba'ala Mefirin Nidareha. That basically concludes the whole thing. Naram Urasa Shaviu Ba'ala Mefirin Nidareha. No. Maybe it's saying, oh, Avia, oh, Bala, Katanika, Mashmalan. Ve'ein tzarich lomar shekiyem echad mihem. So if ein tzarich lomar, why are you saying it? So then, lom alelom isna. Ha'ashtir shom ha'efrezeh b'lo zeh v'lo klum. Kiyem echad mihem. Riboy. Ki yitzrich leke gonde fer echad mihem v'kiyem echad mihem v'chozor ha'mekayim v'nishal ha'kalak ha'matom. Ma'o de tema. Well, my de'uki ha'akre, and we're back where we started from. Kamash balan. Ad me'frim shneyem bevat akad. Omar Rav and some have the gears of Rava, Omar Kravim Ayoti Yelish, Unidorea Aleha, Mikan, taking everything into consideration, Mikan Lenaraha Murasa Shavia Ubala Mefirin Nidorea. Ve'ima Haikrob and Nisua active. No, obviously it's not a Nisua. Because im bishum nisua, we have the third case, which is ketuv krach rina, ve'im beit isha nadara. Well, ve'im atarvayu b'nisua, ve'chitem atrei kroy b'nisua lomali. I would say the last case is there lemeimar, she'ein abal mefer bekodmim. Nu, so what? But v'lam amela shamat mina? You know both things, that he's not made for bekodmim, that what he is made for on. Ibait ema, I don't need to look at the context. The word imayotiyeh by definition means havaya is kiddush imasha. Maybe ema avlechudei mefer. So then if avlechudei mefer, in Cain, the whole first part was reisar beit avi alamali. Hashti yesh lomer b'makom arus mefer avlechudei. Shelo b'makom arus b'boy. Okay, so let's try the other way around. Now you're saying the Orus is the Yikr. So then, Ema Avli Boy Orus, but the Orus indeed is the Chudei Mefer. V'chi Tema said, and what's the point of writing the Av? Av the Katharakon Alomali? What do you mean? Mi Boy Leidim Hekim Hekim. He has to keep his mouth shut. No, because then what do I need the last case? In Cain, Beit Isha Nadara Alamai Katav Kavachomer. Umaba makom av the Oros is made for the Chudei. Shaloba makom av where it's already after the Chupa mi boy. Well, maybe that second case of Imbeti Shanadara is simply there to teach us Lomar Shein Abal made for Bekodmim. Yes, indeed, you're very right. Ubine? What are you trying to tell? Isn't that clear then? And what? Oros is made for Bekodmim. Elalav mishum shutvate da av. The Vera Bishmo Tana. Bein ish ishto, bein av lebito, mikam le na'aram urasa, she'avia uba'ala mefirin nidareha.